Do you know what the scariest thing is? To not know your place in this world. To not know why you're here. It's just an awful feeling.
Maestro, I have a confession to make.
All right. It's always good. It's good for the soul, I understand.
It's good for the soul. Yes, it is. I am stressed out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
It's okay. It's a good stress.
Is it? I didn't know there was good stress.
Well, okay, so I'm lying on air. There is no such thing as a good stress. I hear you. No, but I woke up with the what I call the stress throat this morning. Do you have any physical manifestations when you are stressed out? In other words, when you are stressed out,
other than sweating a lot,
sweating profusely, making odd noises, anything in particular,
passing out,
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah, that's all somewhat normal, I think. But for me, it usually manifests itself as a tightening of the throat muscles. So I woke up this morning. I guess I just had way too much stuff on my plate to do. You know that you have those days when you're just totally overbooked morning, noon, and night. And I woke up this morning with the distinct realization that this was one of those days. And so I've had that stress throat all day long. But, Lord willing, we will cure at least the host of that issue, because the first article I wish to review is entitled, Three Ways to Be Instantly More Productive. Before I get into the three ways to be instantly more productive, let me first introduce the program. Welcome to another edition of Career Callings. I'm your host, Robbie Romeiser. And our mission at Career Callings is to help people avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision by helping them find, prepare for, and pursue the work God created them to do. You can join us today by phone, text, or email, phone or text at 864-381-7649. That's 864-381-7649, or by email at robbie@careercallings.net. That's R-O-B-B-I-E. At careercallings.net. So let's launch into the effort to relieve me of my stress throat. Three ways to be instantly more productive, an article I ran across by Lisa Jerry. She was writing for a website called Moto, and she was reviewing a book written by a guy named Charles Duhigg. The Power of Habit is the name of the book. Now, Charles Duhigg, you know what? I just want to say Doohickey. Is that what you? That's why you're smiling
thinking.
Over there, Maestro. I saw you smirking over there behind the microphone there. So I was just curious if that's what you were thinking about. Anyway, Duhigg was our Doohickey. I'm going to say that the entire time. The show has been totally ruined. I can just feel it because I'm going to be saying Doohickey. I'm going to just totally dishonor this guy with his last name. Charles
Don't
Doohickey.
Let the stress get to
Don't
you.
Don't let Go the stress. I'm relieving. This is what happens when I'm stressed out, man. I just start. What is that? Flowing at the mouth, I guess is the way of saying it. He's a journalist, and he was one time just stricken by the fact that he had run into so many other people who were so much more productive than he was with the same amount of time. So he started doing some research, and he began researching teams of people at Google, teams of people at Saturday Night Live, the Saturday Night Live comedy show, the writers of Disney's Frozen, by the way, the movie that came out several years, it was such a big hit, and ended up writing about his research about from those people, the lessons he learned regarding productivity from those people, and other folks in various professions, neurologists, Marines, pilots, and so on and so forth. So here are three things that we can gather from his research, and certainly there's more than that. And as always, I'll link to this article at careercallings.net/radio, where you can read the whole thing for yourself, and also click on the links to his other written works. Number one, ask yourself why you are doing something. And Duhigg likes to say, or goes on to say, the people who are best at staying motivated tend to link tasks to a long-term goal or something that's deeply meaningful to them. For example, he interviewed one professor who said he absolutely hated grading students' papers. Now, let me just pause and digress there for a moment. I don't care what work you're in. I don't care if you are in the perfect work that God has called you to do. There's going to probably be at least one thing, if not a multiple things, that you just don't like doing. God's promise to call you into a work that glorifies Him and benefits others does not come with the promise that you're going to like every bit of it. There's plenty of options or examples, rather, in the Bible where people were called to a work that wasn't always pleasant. All right, back on task here. Instead of dragging his feet, though, this professor would try to think through the why behind why he was grading the students' papers. For example, the reason he might be doing that was to, number one, of course, because he loved educating students and because he wanted to help his university, which funds the cancer research that he does. So as a result of this exercise of trying to grasp a hold of the why behind that dirty work, he was able to reframe the act of grading papers so it felt like a choice, one that allowed him to reaffirm his commitment to his deepest goals and aspirations. So that is asking yourself why you're doing something. Trick number two to becoming more productive, number two, think the big picture. Think big picture. For example, many people make to-do lists by literally writing down every little thing they have to do. And if you've ever taken a time management course or listened to a time management lesson, you were taught to do this, all right? But there's a much more strategic way to approach those tasks for the day. For example, start by thinking about your biggest goal. And let's just say, according to the author here, Lisa Jerry, she said, imagine that your biggest goal, for example, saving money to buy a house or maybe creating a personal website. Start with that at the top of a piece of paper, write it at the top of the paper, and then below that, structure that goal into smaller steps. And this will kind of act as a blueprint for making your goal a reality. So you can be focusing on steps, individual steps that actually help you reach your major goal. Step number three, trick number three to become more productive, take control of one aspect of the situation, no matter how small. Now, I found this one pretty interesting, Maestro, from Mr. Doohickey. It's very hard to be enthusiastic about a task that you feel is being forced on you. I think that's an understatement. What do you think, Maestro?
I think that's true.
That's definitely a truism. In order to feel motivated to do something, we have to feel like we're in control. So what Doohig wrote is that you should try to assert some sort of control over that situation, even in seemingly unimportant ways. And by doing so, that can help you feel better about it. For example, say you're putting off filing your expense reports. Who loves to do that? Now, there are a few rare folks that actually love to do that, and God bless you, I'm not one of them. But let's just say...
They're accountants.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've met many an accountant who were honest with me and said they hate math, but that someone told them that was a great way to make a living, and then they got stuck in it. All right. So, but nonetheless, if you like it or love it, God bless you for that. So you might, maybe you don't like that kind of stuff, though. You hate filling out expense reports, so you put it off. But then again, what Doohig is saying do is try to make it a choice. For example, you might want to listen to a new album that you're excited about hearing while you do it. So even that little bit of control, yeah, you got to do the expense reports, but I can control the background, the music, or maybe there's a radio show you want to listen to or something. But you're controlling something pertaining to that task, and that key is to find some choice, however small, that makes you feel like you're in the driver's seat. So three ways to be instantly more productive by Lisa Jerry on Modo. And again, I'll link to that at careercallings.net/radio so you can read that for yourself. Now, what I would like to do is, Maestro, I think it's time for another edition of Master Johnny Paycheck.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
There is a reason that the United States of America constantly ranks in one of the lowest levels of industrialized nations in math and science. The reason for that is we hate math and science. And people who only are really into what am I trying to say? Really into self-inflicted pain, actually go into that stuff. But it is, which is why, by the way, this article jumped out at me. 28 high-paying jobs for people who hate science. So certainly with the time we have in this segment, we will not be able to get through all 28 of those, and I would not dare to even attempt to do so. But here are a few ideas from businessinsider.com. If you hate science, here's some good-paying jobs to consider checking into. And as always, we'll link to this article and also a great website I've mentioned many times in the program before, onetonline.org, where you can research these careers in great detail about salary levels and what it takes to actually get trained for these kind of jobs and so on. So here's the first one I want to mention. First line supervisor of correctional officers. So you're a you're working in a prison basically, but you're a supervisor. Average salary just under $62,000 a year. This particular article has a science importance level of 13. I guess that's 13 out of 100, which means you don't have to worry about too much science. So that's one idea. Human resources specialist. So this is the type of person in charge of hiring and firing people. In charge of hiring and firing people, just under or just over $62,500 a year as an average salary. Science importance level only 6, which is even better. These folks recruit, screen, interview, and place workers for various companies. Next, public relations specialist. Now, if you're a bubbly person and one who is marketing-minded, this would be a great one to investigate. The average salary, $64,000 a year. Science importance level, 10, which is still really, really good, if you ask me. These people create and maintain a favorable public image for the organization they represent. Now, there are plenty of organizations that really need all the help they can get in that regard in terms of making a favorable public image. So the worse off that company is and the better you are at making them look good, the more money you can make, no doubt. I want to scoot down to, of course, one of my favorites, property, real estate, or community association manager. Of course, I have a real estate background, so that speaks to home. Average salary, just under $66,000 a year. Science importance level, 13. Property, real estate, and community association managers take care of the many aspects of residential, commercial, or industrial real estate properties. And there's all kinds of opportunities, not just brokering and living off commission, but there are plenty of salaried positions as well. Multimedia artist or animator. Now, that one's a good one. $70,000 a year. Science importance level 0. You don't get a better score on the science importance level than 0. So I hope that takes you into the break in a very warm and fuzzy way, and we'll see you on the other side at Career Callings.
Take this job and shove it.
Many people are confused about how Arizona's Grand Canyon was formed. Some think it was carved out by the Colorado River over millions of years, while others believe it eroded during Noah's flood. So what really happened at Grand Canyon? Find out this week on Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal.
Science, Scripture, and Salvation heard every Saturday morning at 7:30 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9, and streaming live at ChristianTalk660.com.
I'm sitting here on location with Blake Burrow of the Knights of Siena Fencing School. And Blake, tell me how you see Teach Me Morpheus benefiting your business.
I have a lot of students, and not everybody either has the time or the ability to take private lessons. And some of the kids would like to practice at home. It is a way for them to make sure that the things that they are practicing are being done the exact same way that they learned in class. For me, as a revenue stream, I only have so many hours in the day to be able to give private lessons. So now people can purchase them at home. And now instead of just serving one person at a time, I could serve as many people that want to learn something about fencing are now my customers.
Help your customers make money for your organization. That's what TeachMeMorpheus.com, a new online learning platform, can do for your business or nonprofit. To learn more, check out TeachMeMorpheus.com, referral code HISRADIO. That's TeachMeMorpheus.com, referral code HISRADIO.
Let's face it, in life, there is no free lunch. Who can you trust?
You can trust the NFCC, the nation's largest nonprofit network of credit counseling and financial education organizations. Come learn with us at nfcc.org.
Call 800-388-2227 or visit nfcc.org, a public service from the NFCC.
Career mismatches cause people financial and emotional pain as they struggle to pay their bills and also to find meaning in their lives. The late Larry Burkett recognized this, and for nearly 30 years, Crown Ministries has helped hundreds of thousands of people around the world find, prepare for, and pursue the purpose-filled work God has called them to do. To learn more about how you or someone you love can use biblical wisdom to avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision, visit careercallings.net/discover, careercallings.net/discover.
All right, I'm in studio here today with Dr. Jerome II of Palmetto Proactive Healthcare. Doctor, how do you see Teach Me Morpheus helping your business?
For example, I see you for a sinus infection, and you realize you forgot to ask me something. Teach Me Morpheus can have one of our videos for sinus infection that you click. It can go through my instructions. We'll basically become a 24/7 resource for our patients.
To learn more, check out teachmemorpheus.com, referral code HISRADIO. That's teachmemorpheus.com, referral code HISRADIO.
Christian Talk 660.
But our lives aren't just measured in years. They're measured in the lives of people we touch around us.
This feels like my calling and my purpose in life. There's something different about this journey that's more heart connected.
Purpose is more than just your core of your own self. It's beyond your own identity. Everybody ultimately wants to serve other people.
You can have everything in life you want. You'll just help enough other people get what they want.
And that little bit of sadness in the mornings you spoke of, perhaps you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Maestro, would you consider yourself a linguist?
Only when I'm speaking. Rest of the time, no.
That was pretty impressive. You know, you are very, very quick on your feet. People probably think we stage that stuff, but we don't. I ask this man these questions, and he comes up with some of the greatest answers on the fly. Let's just see if you know what the word ama means. It's an Indian word. Do you know what the word ama means?
Ama. No, well, I'll just say no.
Okay, you're not even going to fake it, are you?
Not this time.
Fake it till you make it, pal. All right, well, Ama means mother. And we're going to tell a story about someone we've talked about in the past on a previous show. Before we do that, let me reintroduce this segment. This is Career Callings with Robbie Romeiser. And at Career Callings, our mission is to help people avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision by helping them find, prepare for, and pursue the work God created them to do. You can join us today by phone, text, or email at 864-381-7649, 864-381-7649, or by email at robbie@careercallings.net. That's robbie@careercallings.net. Ama had a birth name of Amy Carmichael. Now, we talked about Amy Carmichael a week or two ago on the show regarding one of the other things that happened in her extraordinary life as a missionary in the country of India. And it has a direct impact or direct correlation to our careers for the Lord. Now, she was a missionary in India from 1895 to 1951 when she passed away. And the bulk of her ministry was children-oriented. She, first of all, started taking in children, young girls in particular, who were basically tagged with a life of temple prostitution. She would rescue these children, these little girls, from that life, and they would hear the gospel and almost without fail eventually accept the Lord as their Savior under the caring teaching of Ama, of Amy Carmichael. And then also the boys as well from time to time for other reasons that were just children that weren't wanted. She eventually had hundreds of children at a time that she would take care of. And over the decades that she served as a missionary, she served thousands upon thousands of children, raising them in the Lord. Well, in September 1931, Amy Carmichael was going to see a piece of property that she was hoping was going to end up being a medical facility for her ministry. And the name of her ministry, by the way, is called Donavur Fellowship, or Donavur Fellowship. When she got there, the owner of the property was supposed to leave a key for her. and he did not leave the key where it was supposed to be. So it took her quite some time to find the key. When she finally found the key, she went inside, looked around, put the key back where she found it, and then left the property. Well, it took so long to find the key in the first place that when, by the time it was time to leave the property, it was dark outside. She had entered into the property from the front entrance, but for whatever reason, she left out the rear entrance. And when she left out the rear entrance, since it was dark, she did not realize that there was a huge pit that had been dug in the backyard. So she fell into the pit and broke her leg. And she was in that pit for about 5 hours, you know, writhing in pain with a broken leg before someone finally found her. And when they did find her, they then transported her to the hospital. And since it had been raining quite a bit for several days there, the dirt roads were just filled with, you know, channels, you know, the kind of channels that water, erosion channels, if I can say it that way, that rivers of water will cut in dirt roads. And so it was a very rough ride to the hospital. So her leg was jostled back and forth. Not only was she in pain, that constant jostling made it pretty much impossible for her leg to heal. The doctors at the hospital did what they could for her, but the leg never did heal correctly. And as a result of that, every time she tried to walk on it, it was very, very painful. So from 1931 until her death in 1951, she was pretty much in her room most of the time, and just trying to be as immobile as possible. Now, at that time, she began to wonder if her work for God was complete, because during from 1895 to 1931, she was always on the go. She was, if I could say it this way, just because it equates to an understanding I have of what a typical entrepreneur is like, I would imagine that she was pretty much the same way. Always on the go, always the one driving things to happen, always having her hands in every aspect of the ministry. And that could not continue since she couldn't get up and move around. So she began to wonder whether or not God was going to just have her end her ministry there and her work at Donabor Fellowship. Well, what happened in that last 20 years of her life is, since she was immobile, two wonderful things happened. Number one, she ended up writing 16 books that I would argue very emphatically would never have been written if she had continued on in her current state of being on the go all the time. So the Lord, through this injury, made her be still, and as a result of her being still, she was able to take her vast experiences and her vast wisdom and turn that into the written word in the form of 16 books that have continued to bless people long after her death. Number two, as a result of her no longer being able to be up and about and doing the day-to-day, she had to learn the art of delegation and training, and began to train people how to do all the stuff that she had been doing herself. And as a result of that, her work at Donabor Fellowship was able to live on well beyond her death in 1951. Now, many ministries, as well as many businesses, die with the person who founded them, because they never do master the art of delegation and training. And as a result, everything about that ministry revolves around them, is tied to them. So when they die or get disabled or retire, that work does as well. So through her injury, the Lord not only enabled her to redirect her work into the written word of those books, he also enabled her through that injury to train her successors so that the work could continue. My point is this. There may be something going on in your life right now. I have no idea if it's a medical-related issue, a financial-related issue, emotional-related issue, family-related issue, but something may have happened in your life that makes you wonder, what on earth am I supposed to do next? And it could very well be, don't know for sure, but it could very well be God doing something in your life the way he did in Amy Carmichael's life, and redirecting you to a different type of work. Now, even though she shifted from being the day-to-day pusher, if I can say it that way, of what happened at Donabor, she still was still involved in that ministry, and she was also able to redirect her remaining 20 years of her career into that of an author and a true director, not someone doing the work every day. So, point is this. No matter what plans we have for our own lives, no matter what direction we think we ought to take, if the Lord wants us to do something different, he's going to make it very, very obvious to us that he wants us to take a shift in the career calling he's given to us. What we have to do is be willing to trust him that he knows better than we do. And whatever trial or tragedy might be going on right now in your life, just make sure you don't get so caught up in the why behind it that you fail to see the fact that there's a reason that the Lord has for it. And even though you don't know what that reason is yet, someday he'll make you aware of it. As Isaiah 46:10 says, declaring the end and the result from the beginning and from ancient times the things that are not yet done. What Isaiah 46:10 is saying is basically this: the Lord sees the end from the beginning and we don't. So don't get so caught up in trying to understand the why of what things are happening right now. Just trust the Lord that he's pushing you in the right direction. Trust him to know the end from the beginning and wait patiently until such time as he makes clear to you what that why is all about. All right? So moving on to other matters. You have already had the fundamental skills you need to succeed. This is an article written by a guy named Trent Ham, and it was found on lifehacker.com. And just a little bit of a lesson here I want to share with you. He was telling the story in his article about this job he once had. It was actually his first job out of college, and one of his coworkers and he were tasked with doing a certain technical job at this company. And there were supposed to be three team members. The third team member, who actually bailed out and left the company before the project began, was the person who was supposed to be the one leading the project, the person with the most technical experience. Well, the remaining two guys, including Trent, decided to go ahead and take on this project, which took about a year to do, but they really had to educate themselves on the technical side of this particular project. And the interesting thing about the article is this. This was a very IT, technology-related issue, but the person who actually ended up becoming the leader of this task force, not Trent, but his colleague, the colleague had never been trained in IT. He was a high school teacher. He wasn't even a computer science high school teacher. He taught agricultural classes in high school. Yet he became a leader in an IT department on an IT project. And what Trent was trying to prove is this. Many times you already have the package of skills in hand right now that you need to get a good job. You would be amazed at how many human resources people don't care as much about the technical skills you bring to the job, but rather the soft skills you bring to the job, the people skills. So here's a quick rundown of things Trent was trying to highlight. Be reliable. Be a good listener, especially in meetings. Step up to unwanted tasks and challenges. Avoid negative conversations. Learn and build skills all the time, and be well rested and have plenty of energy on a regular basis. Also, be a person who sets personal goals. These are characteristics that Trent noticed in his colleague, the agricultural class high school teacher, and this person was able to transform that into roles of leadership in a totally unrelated field to what he'd been trained in. So what you ought to be doing when you're trying to get another job that maybe this outside of your technical training area is to show how you have these kinds of things already and how they can benefit people. All right? Maestro, I think I want to end with something from our friend Tim Hawkins there, the iPhone.
I love to communicate to music. I just started communicating with music to my kids. They don't listen to me talking anymore. I just use their songs and get my point across. You know, seriously, you should try it. It's awesome. They do listen. We're at the mall the other day. They're just begging me for an iPhone for an hour. I want an iPhone. I want an iPhone. I want an iPhone. I want an iPhone. I finally said, dude, I'm not going to buy you an iPhone because you asked for it like you need one. You don't. I'm not going to buy you an iPhone. You're insane if you think I'll pay for it. So be on your way. I'm not going to listen. Go away. All your time, here's a dime. If you find a payphone, let no iPhone today. And that's what I do.
Maestro, I'm just checking my iPhone. Looks like we're out of time. See ya. Have a good week.